This is Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Here are your hosts, Dr. Tim Slecker and Dr. Johnny Lupinacci, educated educators talking education.
Ah, there it is. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators talking education Monday. Johnny, what's happening, my friend? How are you? Did you have a good weekend?
Oh, yeah, always, of course. You know, we're wrapping up the school year most places. Some schools even out for the summer already. But, you know, we're coming down to that smooth landing that we hope all classrooms and students get to have. You know, so it's exciting to start another week off here. It's a special night, Tim.
It is special. But you know what, Johnny? Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Minocqua Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Minocqua Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out MinocquaBrewingCompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer. And yes, great guest, Johnny. We've had shows where we've talked about the science of reading. She came in and talked to us before. I'm going to get a little deeper, though. Three queuing system. And this makes me ask the question, I wonder what Matt Damon's mom would say about the three queuing system. And there she is, Nancy Carlson Page. Welcome back to Busted Pencils, Dr. Nancy. How are you?
Oh, I'm good. Hi, Tim. Hi, Johnny.
Hey.
It's good to be here. So okay. You want me to answer that about the three queuing system?
Yeah. So in reading, we know the science of reading is now mandated, what'd you say, in 25 states required. And what I'm seeing now a lot on social media is a lot of people are saying, you know, we're not even allowed to use the three queuing system anymore. And I thought, what a great night for Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. What the heck is three queuing system? Because I know a lot of people are out there going like, what is it? It must be, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay. Just a little bit of context. Reading wars have gone on for 50, 100 years. They've cycled through. This cycle is bizarre because it's not coming from educators or researchers. It's coming from journalists and media people. And we're in a time, in case you guys haven't noticed, where people grab onto ideas, you could even say conspiracies, and promote them without digging deeper. And it's something happening to the whole society. It's the complex reasons why. But this is partly a function of that kind of milieu that we're in. So a lot of states have jumped on board. They've said the three queuing system is debunked. That isn't true. You can read the book, Fact-Checking the Science of Reading, and find out all the facts. The facts are in that book, Fact-Checking Science of Reading by Tierney and Pearson, and you can get all the accurate information. But the three queuing system means giving children a lot of information about how the print system works so they can figure out how to read. And I'll tell you a little more about what that means. But language is a complex, beautiful thing, right? And children learn it learn to talk without anybody teaching them. And reading, to some extent, needs to be taught, but it's also in the environment, and children do pick up a lot just by seeing stop signs and signs in grocery stores and so forth. But when it gets into schools, we want to try to help them learn in a more systematic way how to make sense of print. So you wouldn't just give them one little bit of information, which is phonics. You want to give them all the information we can possibly give, because their brains, nobody really understands how the brain does this, but it's taking all this information and trying to make sense of it in a very rapid way. And also, it's different for every child. That's why there's not a one-size-fits-all methodology, because kids learn, research has shown, reading instruction is successful some of the time and not all of the time in different settings. So a teacher has to be prepared with a big repertoire to understand how is any individual kid making sense of print? Because kids are going to do it differently. But the three cueing system actually means, and it comes out of psycholinguistic theory, and it's something that I taught to my graduate students for years, that yes, we understand the print system by understanding sounds and letters, also called the graphophonemic system. We also understand print by making sense of it. That is to say, if a child's reading a sentence that says IAA, and there's a three-letter word starting with a B, they're going to use their understanding of meaning to know, what could that be? I ate a what? It wouldn't be a bus, would it? Because you don't eat a bus. No, it would be, a bun. It's a bun. And they might actually say bun before they've even seen all the three letters, because maybe they don't even need them. But if they do need them, they see the N and they go, bun, okay. But they also, so meaning is something that's driving making sense of print, and we always want meaning to operate. It's called the semantic system in the three cueing thing. Semantics and meaning are basically the same thing. And then also there's an intuitive understanding of grammar, because kids understand grammar when they're talking. They know parts of speech without knowing the name of the noun or adjective. But that's why they wouldn't read the sentence as I ate a bright. Because a bright, maybe they saw the B, but they wouldn't say bright because that's an adjective, and they intuitively know that a noun would go there, even though they were never taught that. Does this make sense?
Yeah. So
all this information that kids already have about language, because having a strong oral language background is the biggest thing to help them learn to read, because they have this knowledge of speaking. They already know we talk to make sense. Why are we talking to each other? Because we're trying to make sense with each other. We're trying to speak meaningfully. You wouldn't ever take that away from a speaker. You don't ever want to take their voice away from them. And the same as they learn to read, they start to use what they know about language and bring it forward when they're trying to make sense of print. So they're bringing forward a knowledge of semantics or meaning, grammar, syntax, and also letters and sounds. They already know letters and sounds, but it's very helpful to teach them phonics, especially in the beginning, because they letters and sounds are most helpful when kids are first learning. So all these three systems, they're called the three cueing systems, they're all operating.
Right.
So this turned into some crazy controversy that doesn't even have any basis in anything.
Well, because I'm going to say that, so the critics, their big thing is, well, when you teach kids three cueing, Nancy, all you're doing is teaching them to guess, and that's just not teaching them reading.
Okay. This whole criticism came out of a podcast called Sold a Story by Emily Hanford, who's a reporter, not an educator. And she criticized, she went to some, I listened to it, I could barely stand it. Mm-hmm. And the people who wrote the book on fact-checking said it was mean-spirited, and that's kind, because it was horrible, full of false information, misleading, misconceptions, and distortions of what three-cueing even is. She didn't ever even understand it. But they set this up as kind of a false dichotomy. It's either you teach all the cueing systems or you teach phonics. And it wasn't even a real dichotomy in the first place. But the word guessing was something that one of the original psycholinguists, Ken Goodman, used the word guessing to mean that sometimes when you read, you think about when you read, if you're a good reader, a fluent reader, you are sometimes reading a word really fast and you don't even read it correctly, but you don't know till you go back and self-correct. Right? You don't even know you read the wrong word if you're reading really fast. So he used the word guessing, and then it got distorted in this new political ideological framework to be what we were teaching kids, which we never were.
Because, yeah, when you talk about this, you've got three points to the three cueing system, and it sounds like a system approach to saying, You know, if you need some letter hints, you're going to use some letter and some phonemic skills. If you have some sense of what you're reading, you might draw on some knowledge about what it is you think you're reading.
Exactly.
And so you're describing, I think, what most listeners would say, well, that sounds like how everybody tries to learn how to read. Yeah. How does it get to the point, though, now that truly, like in my state of Ohio, and I think you said 25 other states, it's illegal to teach three queuing system. In other words, it's illegal to teach kids a system of how to learn to read. That's the way I interpret that.
Well, I just got an email today from a colleague who said in 25 states, children are being, our teachers are not allowed to ask kids, does this make sense to you? This thing you just read. And what I think is that the key to reading and speaking is making sense. That's what you always want kids to be able to do. This whole thing has gone way extreme and is real bizarre, you guys. Really, it's gone off the rails. And it's getting passed. Even in my state, there's a bill to pass this very thing. It's horrifying because Massachusetts is usually so good in education. But all the legislators are picking up on this and they're using the same words. If you look at all the legislation in all the states, they have the same, they say the three queuing system is debunked. It's not debunked. Mm. And phonics is the only way to teach. And that's not true. There's no research to show that only phonics helps kids read. There's no research. Even the reading panel in the year 2000 said phonics alone wouldn't do it. There's no research to show that. So it's like everybody, what's happening is like minds think. Everyone's saying the same thing, but it's not based in anything truthful.
This is the part too that's really challenging when we think about this and you say, you know, thank goodness for Dr. Nancy Carlson Page. What would Matt Damon's mom say about three queuing? Johnny Lupinacci, hopefully you've been brought up to speed a little bit on three queuing and recognizing that it's a system to help kids learn, learning itself, which is very messy. And so the ability to actually have a system, it's going to use this to help kids learn to read. It's a way to do it. Dr. Nancy Carlson Page, Matt Damon's mom, thank you so much for busting pencils with us tonight, Nancy.
Yeah, thank you, Dr. Nancy Carlson Page.
Thank you. I hope I helped you. It's a complex issue. It's complex. So yeah. I'm trying to boil it down in some sensible way. Hopefully I helped. But okay.
And we're going to bring some crazy when we get back.
Thank you.
Damon on Busted Pencils Radio. Please stop bothering me.
Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk, educated educators. Talking education, our guest Jonathan Gurko's new book, Publicization. Talking more about it, definitions. Johnny Lupinacci. During the break, you and I were, you know, we were talking about that. You had a question for Jonathan. I'm just going to let you go with it, man.
Well, yeah, and I like what we're talking about here, Tim. And Jonathan took us up into that set, the last break there, in a really, I think, a really honest moment that you said, you know, like maybe some people might disagree with, but I think it's a real important one. When we start to think about what it means to be a public school can mean different things. We could take it as the label of our traditional sort of historical knowledge that, you know, as far back as we can remember, there's private schools. There's often reserved, you know, for the elite or, you know, the wealthy. There's a tuition sort of system and there's private education and there's public schools. And by and large, mostly historically, we understand public schools as our neighborhood schools, right? Our local school system and, you know, where you lived kind of gave, you know, pointed to where you would go learn. And we know that that has still, by and large, some implications about like social class and racial divides in our country. And certainly isn't as simple as to say, well, we just need, you know, strong public schools everywhere. We need a lot of work on like zoning and a lot of different things to address free and quality at the point of access. And, you know, Jonathan took us up to that messiness that a lot of states are pretty far and deep into at this point, where the landscape of free at the point of access has changed. And there's a sort of need. I've always been kind of, you know, looking for this. And I think Jonathan's book, Publicization, is a great start and companion to this conversation. In a sense, what is like a typology, you know, almost like a legend on a map to give us a key for understanding where our kids, when I say our kids, just children in our community, can go to school, where we educate the future citizens of this country. It's not as simple as the history it used to be, where it's like, oh, private school, you know, you want to enroll, maybe they take a test to get into it, or you pay a lot of money and they go to this private school, or they go to the local neighborhood school. Well, school choices and different things started to change that landscape. Flash forward, enter charters, right? And I think some of the myth of the debate is charters are private schools and public schools are public schools. And there is some truth to that, as, you know, in the book, Jonathan lays out, you know, privatization of things, but flips it and talks about, what about the publicization? So I think it's really insightful and it's honest. And sometimes it takes us being open-minded about those sides that we're often on. But thinking about like a typology, there's different types of schools. And kind of, Jonathan, can I ask you just for our listener? I think we've shared it a little bit, but I think clearly, like, you lay it out in the book, but you're inviting folks to sort of unify around, let's understand what the choices are, not advocating that there should be choice, because that school choice thing is reserved for sort of the argument for privatization. When we start talking about public school on the ground, you know, parent out there in the community who's seeing the billboards, looking at the schools, driving by, and now there's like this market for like where to choose to go to school, which kind of by and large part of a larger problem. But some of our charter schools are public by the definition of being free at the point of access. Can you give us a little brief typology? I hate even using that word. I know what to call it. Like, give us a legend to the key of what we mean by, like, there's, it's a little more complicated than just private versus public.
Johnny, you've put a lot of strands on the table. I'll try to weave them together. This is a colorful tapestry here. You know, I like to think about it less as a typology, types of schools, and take the pragmatic in the conventional sense and the philosophically pragmatic definition of, let's judge something by the outcomes, right? So if a school doesn't exclude, right, no admissions test, which is a form of exclusion, and no tuition, even with scholarships, which can be a form of exclusion. Mm-hmm. And if you add to the exclusion test the classic historical goals of schooling, of preparing citizens, productive workers, good neighbors, and I think we've got to add a fourth public good, stewards of our planet. So if a school is doing those four things, producing public goods and not excluding, I'm hard pressed to see how that's not a public education. Mm-hmm. And I'm prepared to look at a charter school, a district school, a proprietary school, a nonprofit private school, and judge it against those outcomes and the exclusion test to say, are they delivering a public education? Mm-hmm. And, you know, in the case of charters, look, it is a lot older than the late 90s in Minnesota when the first charter law was passed. Mm-hmm. Going back to the 19th century, chartering has been used in this country as a way to deliver education for a very long time. I'm thinking of the academies and the academy movement. Mm-hmm. There were thousands of academies that had permission, a charter from the state, to run a school. Now, did those academies pass the other measures of publicness? Not so much. But as a mechanism to promote schooling, we've been doing chartering for a long time. And I point that out Because take somebody like Diane Ravitch. She's been on your show. She's a champion of district schools. She is a foe of privatization, but she knows that history. And she should be looking at our history to find different ways to promote public education.
Johnny Lupinacci, what do you think of that?
Well, I love it. I love it, Jonathan, because it helps. I think like no good discussion has one side and versus the other side. Like nothing good or real ever comes from that, right? I think it's, if we're drawing some Star Wars here, only Siths think in absolute, right? And so assuming that none of us are Sith lords or the Sith ilk, then we have this kind of, we have this civic duty, especially as educators and advocates of that definition of public, Jonathan, that you gave, that resonates with me really strongly, especially as a Detroit teacher who sort of went through a real shift and change of what a neighborhood school looked like, and both certainly experienced exploitive charters and then some really great local neighborhood chartered schools that built on that tradition of university schools, of lab schools, and that as a very principal refused to be exclusionary. And
well,
so
that's right, Johnny. Let me interrupt you for a second. When I was the authorizer in New York City, a lot of people that came to my office wanted the freedom to try something different.
Yeah.
They weren't competitive ideologues trying to put district schools out of business. And they picked up the chartering mechanism to do it. Yeah. Not unlike the way the small school advocates, Debbie Meyer and Ted Sizer, did small schools in the 80s.
Yep. I love that, Jonathan. And we're going to dive back into that when we come back. Callers, you can give us a call if you want to. We are here. 855-752-4842. Join us when we come back.
You know, Jess is on the music tonight. Busted Pencils, fully leaded education talk. Little Linkin Park there. Number 855-752-4. Whoa. And then, sorry, I got cut out there. Busted Pencils. Yeah, we're here. Our guest, Jethro Jones, teacher, leader, principal, missionary. He's been out there just doing it. Podcaster, book author. You got it. I mean, we're out there talking about this whole idea of learning. It isn't what you think it is. It's quite messy. Taking a look at learning loss and going, yeah, sorry, just can't really have such thing as learning loss. Before we go any deeper, though, got Joanne on the phone, one of our favorite callers. Joanne, what's happening, our friend?
Great show. I have a question that is pretty tricky about learning engagement. Say you have a young boy, and the parents come to you and say, my young boy learns better with other boys and is more engaged with learning with other boys. When that young boy is with girls, for whatever reason, maybe not as engaged. And what do you do with that type of a question? I mean, it's very, very practical. I have heard about it during some picnics I've attended lately. Do you put the young boy in an environment with other young boys, or just say, hey, maybe we got a little engagement of learning loss, but the young boy will learn how to deal with girls?
Jethro, that's all you, man.
Oh, I can't wait to dig into this. So, couple different things. Number one, thank you, first of all, for caring enough about your kid to recognize that maybe things aren't going well when girls are around. That's wonderful. That's attention. Thanks for being a great parent. That is exactly what I would say. I'm also glad that you brought up the idea of engagement, because Damon Hargraves and I, he was my assistant principal in Kodiak, Alaska, and is someone I really admire and look up to. He and I would talk about engagement all the time, that you can be quote unquote engaged, but you're not actually enrolled, which when I had Seth Godin on my podcast, he called it being enrolled in school, that you have to choose and want to be there. And so the question is not about whether or not they are engaged in the learning process. It's, are they enrolled in the learning process? Are they choosing to participate and be engaged in it? And so if that is the case where a male student is struggling because there are girl students around, what do we need to do to help him figure out for himself how to regulate himself so that he can get done what he needs to get done? And it's the idea of he's in charge of his learning. And if we start from that perspective, we involve him in the process instead of saying, we're in charge of your learning, so we're going to put you in the right spot for learning. We need to talk with him and help him figure that out for himself, rather than take that responsibility on our shoulders and think that it's our responsibility to help him be regulated around all these cute girls that are very distracting.
Johnny Lupinacci, you took your hat off to that one, man.
Well, it's getting hot. It's getting hot in here. But I mean, I love it. Jethro, love his response. I mean, you could tell, seasoned vet here, you know, a guy from the trenches of, you know, good education in the midst of schooling. It's like kind of one of those, you go to your toolbox and a carpenter has, you know, a great, you know, a grasp of how to use a hammer, you know, and Jethro's saying like, hey, love the engagement, love what you're noticing, because really important that you have, you know, this learner has someone backing them on this.
Yeah.
However, like there's different ways that we need to adjust and look. And so we got to be able to work with different people around us, because even though engagement and learning is individualized, no matter where we go, we're doing it in society in some context. And so we're balancing and practicing all those skills. And, you know, and also good teachers out there, like we have diverse ways we group our students together, you know, to apply the social learning. Even when it's social learning, though, and I like Jethro points this out, that's the kind of engagement that individual learners are like, hey, I'm interested in this. I'm alert, I'm engaged, and I'm enrolled. Oftentimes because they have a high investment in what their peers are thinking and interacting with them. So sometimes I think we do push it too much to try and like get the perfect configuration of who's sitting with who and who's learning. And so teachers, I encourage you, you know, like, I think Jethro outlined this for us. I encourage you to kind of get that, let it be messy. Let groups kind of form and flow and, you know, facilitate them and, you know, move them around and take note of when students work really well together and where they might need to work on how they work with others. But, you know, that's a unique thing. And I love that caller Joanne brought it up. Thanks, Joanne, for listening thoughtfully. Yes. And always contributing really, you know, really, really great questions. Love mm-hmm. it.
Yeah, and I got a great story after you read the thing you need to read about okay. boys and girls working together and how they learned how to do it. So you take it away, Tim.
That's Johnny, man. To you, oh, buddy.
Okay, well, I could take it away and we can get right back to it because I think it's nice. But we're going to sneak this in here because, listener, you know what time it is. It's Civic Media Scani Summer Statewide Text to Win Contest. It's on now through June 14th. Download the Civic Media app and listen throughout the day for a chance to hear codes to text in for a chance to win. New keywords are announced in the odd numbered hours from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m. That's 7, 9, and 11 a.m., 1, 3, 5, and 7 p.m. So, listener, tune in to Nightlight after Busted Pencils with Pete Schwabba to hear the next code, which will be announced at the top of the 7 p.m. hour and will be valid through 7:59 p.m. Daily prizes include Wisconsin Dells prize packs and a pair of Milwaukee Brewers club level tickets. Enter for your chance to win a grand prize Scani getaway in Door County, Lake Geneva, or Fort Atkinson. Ooh. All right, now we got that done so our listeners can win some contests. Let's but Jethro, go. Come back to that great story, my man.
All right, so we were doing this thing at my middle school in Fairbanks, Alaska that we called Synergy. What Synergy was is time outside of the classroom, so not in a content area where kids could work on something that would improve the world that they lived in. And they could define, well, it was solve a problem in the world. They could define problem, they could define world, and they could figure out what that solution looked like. So these young women got together and said, we want to teach soccer, cheer, and volleyball to second and third grade girls at the elementary school next door. Yep. as they're doing this, they're saying, you know what? We feel like boys need to learn these skills also. So we want to involve the boys, but we're already maxed out. So they found a bunch of boys who they thought would be good athletic boys to help the help them teach the other boys. They brought these boys into their group, and then they realized that these boys were just messing everything up because they weren't focusing. They were distracted, like just what Joanne was talking about. So they came to me and they said, how do we fire these boys without making them feel like they are terrible human beings? They have no value, because they do, but it just isn't going to work for what we're trying to do. Now, think about that for a moment. What seventh and eighth grade girl is going to be that aware of what it means to fire someone if we're just teaching the curriculum? There's just no way. But these girls understood that this was their responsibility, this was their project, and we were just the guides and the mentors there for them. That's what they understood. And so they asked the right question. Then they fired the boys. And most adults don't know how to fire people effectively, but they fired them in a way where the boys walked away saying, okay, we get it. You make sense. We'll go find a different project to join. I mean, talk about a powerful learning experience driven by them, focused on what they needed in the moment. And now for the rest of their life, they know how to fire people with compassion and care.
Well, that's the part, though, too. Yeah, the whole learning that took place there, Jethro, as you said, you know, not only does learning, is it messy and it looks like this, and then sometimes, though, what is it that we're learning? You go, oh, wait, they learned that? Oh, my, who knew?
Is there a state standard for how to fire people effectively? I don't think so, but it sure is a good skill to have.
Oh, the ability to, just you said, from an empathetic standpoint, for this, for the whole reason, you know, thinking of somebody going, oh, I get why I'm going to move on to something else now. It's, you know, I'm not a bad person. I didn't do anything, but I just realized this. So yeah, what a great way to illustrate that. So Jethro, take that then though too, and say, okay, so that moment, which was essentially unscripted, right? The reality, though, is that more and more, the heavy emphasis on dictated scripted lessons is just the reality teachers are facing. How do they kind of take moments like that and really plan more of these, you know, learning opportunities that are outside of the bounds of the dictates?
Yeah, that is a real challenge for sure. And my heart breaks for anybody who has a principal who's in your room checking to make sure you're following the script. That's a terrible situation to be in. I was a principal that had that in our building, and I just never went into that classroom where the scripted lessons were happening, because I didn't want the teacher to have that as her demo lesson. And I didn't want to emphasize or enforce that anymore than it already was being done. So the key is finding those opportunities to teach kids to be good, flourishing human beings wherever you can, and pulling those kinds of things in. I was just at a conference this last week and asked a room full of principals and teachers, what's more important, how the kids feel or the content that you actually learn? And one of the speakers gave a whole talk about this thing, and they said, everybody raised their hand and said, we think it's more important the kids know we love them, that we care about them, that they become good people. Everybody agrees with that, but we don't act that way. Just like learning is the learner's responsibility, your profession, your career is your responsibility, and you need to stand up and say, this is not okay when things are not okay. You need to have the courage to do that. And it can be scary, but it's worth it to take the effort to say the things that need to be said.
Man, I just think about that. The whole idea, though, too, you know, if you're scripted, I know there are some teachers listening right now who are facing the fact that actually tomorrow, you know, they're going to have to follow the script. And in fact, depending on where they are and depending on the principal and the leadership in the school district, I mean, some of that is going to be very top down. And some of the teachers are going to be like, man, where can I get me a principal like Jethro Jones? Yeah. Because I know tomorrow morning that not only am I going to have to be on the script, I'm going to be on the clock. I'm going to be on the script. And my kids better be making sure that their pencils are sharpened the right way. Because if they get me off script and off the timing, the principal is going to come down on me. You know, just the way I just described that, right, Jethro? You just think it's going like, really? Do we do that to people? Yeah, we do.
Unfortunately. And the other thing about that is that in order to make that synergy time happen, I had to take it out of the classroom, because we had tried it earlier where they were in the language arts or the math classroom and the teachers wouldn't let go of their content area. So I had to literally make a time in the schedule for synergy that was not focused on any kind of particular content area to be able to have that flexibility so the teachers could finally relax and not feel like, well, I have kids in my math classroom, I have to teach math. No, that's not what this time is for. And I had to redesign the schedule to make it so that that was possible. You know, I know the crazy thing. This is wild. Blow your mind. Our students did better on all of their assessments.
There you go.
After we implemented this program, MAP scores went up, state test scores went up, individual grades went up. Kids who were total punks before are now like focused and dedicated and doing the right thing. Just incredible.
Love it. Jethro Jones, man, you are busting pencils truly with us. Love it. We're going to, I hate to let you go, but it sounds like, you know, you hooked us up with another next guest, and it sounds like this is a return invitation. Jethro, people who want to
don't be shocked if you see me and Jethro sitting next to each other on one of these videos soon, Tim.
That's right.
Where can people find you, Jethro?
Yeah, I'm at Jethro Jones on all the social networks. So at Jethro Jones on Twitter, Instagram, LinkedIn, TikTok's a little different, but I don't post there much. So, but at Jethro Jones, would love to connect with anybody. And I took a bunch of notes and put links in my Twitter off of this episode right here. So if you go there right now, they're up at the top.
Awesome. Jethro Jones, thanks for busting pencils, man. Tim and Johnny, break it down when we get back. You know what? Wednesday night, you're always walking into the light. Busted pencils, fully leaded education talk. Educators Amplified in the house. Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie. Everything. Social, emotional. Just in case people are like, what are they talking about? You know, regulation stuff. Well, if you know, social, emotional learning and realizing that the social and emotional is a reality. And if we don't deal with that, in fact, I like the way we're talking about this, because it's a we. It's not just how do we help the students, but who we are as teachers when we enter the space where we are socially, emotionally, how we're feeling, how the kids are. You bring that all together. Teacher Joanna, I'm feeling like I'm starting to become a good student.
Well, again, you've always been a good student. Everybody is. But something that comes to mind is, when we talk about this kind of stuff too, you really have to practice it yourself first before you can, you know, expect it of others. And so that is something that I really advocate for, is for teachers to be able to experience and have opportunities to develop their knowledge base and practice in these areas. And that's why I think that the workplace should support their own regulation and well-being, because you can't, you know, again, it's the whole, like, you can't give it if you don't have it. So something really important is, and so that's why, hey, if you feel like you're growing, Tim, yay, that's what we want, right? Or that's what we hope to empower people, right? To empower themselves with, these concepts of like, where am I at, that I'm not bad, that I am just a human. I don't even know if I'd call it social emotional. I never did or do, because I'm like, this is like, our brain and body. This is how humans work.
Yeah, I'll add to that. You know, I think it's kind of like either in the 2 or 4 window to think like, okay, so Teacher Hallie and Teacher Joanna are talking about these concepts. And so now I like get them. And so like now we should just like teach them. You know, like I think that's kind of what we do in our system is that like we learn a new concept and then we're like, oh, I'll just go teach it. We're so much about this regulation and what we're about is like just increasing awareness for yourself. You know, like, sure, you might, whatever. Joanna would always say this and it always says this to me. There's a difference between knowing and doing.
Yeah.
You know, and so we're really good at the knowing part in our school. How do we get to the doing? And in order to get there, I'm always like, you've got to apply it to yourself first. And so take time, you know, those that are listening, Tim and Johnny, even myself, you know, this is about like when we are dysregulating, you're noticing it, you're aware of it. You're not like, ah, what do I do now? And judging yourself and being hypercritical. It's more of like, here I am. What level am I at? How can I bring myself down? You know, or just being kind to yourself. Like tonight might be the night where I'm chilling at an 8. You know, it doesn't mean I have to live there forever. It means that sometimes, yeah, really crappy things happen and we're going to feel bad sometimes, you know? And so it's kind of like, you got to play around with it. Like to kids, we give them Play-Doh, to adults, we give them regulation.
Oh, I love that. I love that. Thank you so much. This is so helpful. Yeah. I mean, I feel like that's such a good reminder for all of us here, but for listener out there, you know, these are useful tools. And I think Teacher Joanna said before, like, we don't have to be in the perfect place to practice. And I love that you said practice it, because I think sometimes we just think teaching is just this gift, right, that people are predisposed to. But teachers, you can find your vibe, your voice, and you can practice, especially as we go into the sort of off season, right? We can reinvent ourselves. We can reflect on, you know, what can be, what's possible, and we can practice these things. You know what else we can do? If you're in Madison, we can all get together and we can have a brew, you know, or we could have something else like a glass of wine, or, you know, they have amazing soda. I know Tim and I shared one of those when we were at the Monaco Brewing Company. Busted Pencils is sponsored by the Monaco Brewing Company, who sued the state of Wisconsin to end its parasitic voucher system that hurts public schools. Monaco Brewing Company is making Wisconsin great again, one beer at a time. Check out monacobrewingcompany.com to see where you can buy their progressive beer.
Nice. You know, like you point out too, Johnny. Yeah, good soda pop. Whatever you call it, pop, soda, cola, or something like that.
A couple of pops with the fellas and the great gals in your community. Just have a few pops at the Monaco Brewing Company.
Oh, Johnny, too. And just remember, Scotty Summer, there will be a code tonight. Top of the hour, 7 o'clock, making sure everybody's there, doing the Scotty Summer there. Busted Pencils, fully leaded, 855-752-4842. Where do we go from here, you two?
Well, I want to stress that, again, this isn't just ways to, that we don't have to just leave it at, like, there's ways to become more regulated. We can really look at how schooling can support and expand and encourage regulation, and that could include focusing on the adults. And how I said, it's really important that teachers know, feel, experience, and get to practice this. It means looking at our environments in school in terms of like crowdedness, not crowdedness, noise, how, you know, things run smoothly or not. Do our policies generate regulation or do they create dysregulation? Our students always commented on so many policies that dysregulated them further, things they worried about in terms of, again, how electronic grading worked or student fees and like threats to not be able to attend dances and things like that. Like some of our policies that we think are helpful were actually pretty harmful. A philosophy that stress drives behavior throughout the school, not just in Teacher Joanna's class, but the premise that we're going to operate from. And then also going back to several weeks ago, that focus on all domains of learning. If we did that, we'd have that built in, the focusing on all those domains of learning brings that balance in. And it's that balance. What is regulation? It's balance.
Teacher Joanna, Teacher Hallie, thanks for busting pencils with, not two and four, but with us. Here. It's my favorite day of the week. It's Wednesday. Teacher Hallie, Teacher Joanna, Tim, we get to chop it up. Listener, join us for the rest of the week. We'll be back here tomorrow, same time. Let's go.
Woo-woo.